Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 569. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot tonight, Kevin. How about yourself?
Yeah, it's kind of the usual on a Tuesday night. Not a whole lot on. Most TV shows have ended. So anything that I am picking up at this point is definitely an old series that I just haven't watched yet. Or just very old series. I watched the episode of Different Strokes that they had, the very special episode about bulimia today.
Ah.
That was something. I feel like I had heard people talk about it on other podcasts, so it was kind of interesting to actually witness it. But other than that, watching some wrestling, I was a little bit concerned. Jeremy and I decide to do a show, about Money in the Bank itself. I'm thinking, oh, Chris and I only have Raw to talk about. What's really going to happen at Raw this week that's going to carry a show? Well, Becky Lynch, solved that problem, at the opening of the show by announcing her pregnancy and that the Money in the Bank match was not for a contract to cash in, but for the championship itself. So Asuka is your new women's champion. And yeah, I mean, one announcement really had a quite a domino effect there for the women and the landscape of Raw overall. Honestly, no Becky Lynch on WWE TV. That I would say that's akin to missing Roman Reigns on the men's side.
Yeah, absolutely, it is. Once again, of course, congratulations to Becky and Seth. Great news for them. It was definitely, I mean, the rumor started sprouting about yesterday afternoon. It started gaining steam. It was reported on some other outlets, but you know, WWE has kept this COVID-19 era tapings, empty arena tapings, under wraps for the most part, without spoilers getting out. So, you know, it was kind of take it with a grain of salt, but you also kind of knew something was also going on. Becky, it was odd that Becky was not, did not have a match of her own at Money in the Bank and hasn't been on TV for the last month. So, you know, maybe some bells start going off there, and then it is officially announced that she's going to make a major announcement. Well, and, you know, she's also said that she's not injured, so by process of elimination, you can certainly speculate, and you could have certainly speculated in the direction of a pregnancy. This is certainly, you know, especially since in the women's evolution era, the first time this has happened, you know, that a woman this heavily pushed as an in-ring competitor, you know, is taking time off to become be pregnant and give birth. And, you know, nurse and get herself back in shape. That is a very long process under normal circumstances. And considering the fact that over the next 9 to 12 months or so, we don't know where we will be coronavirus-wise, it's going to be a very, very long time before Becky Lynch returns to a wrestling ring, if ever.
Yeah, I mean, that will be kind of the interesting thing to see if she, ever returns. I mean, I guess I'm leaning towards the fact that she probably will return at some point, but it would be kind of tough to do anything other than a partial schedule.
Oh yeah, no, I think her days as a full-time performer are very likely done. It's possible. I mean, if her and Seth, you know, have, know, either hire a nanny or they have a relative they trust to watch their child while they're on the road. I mean, it's not, they're not the only, you know, busy traveling entertainers and just general, you know, people in the workforce who, you know, manage it. And I mean, it's never ideal to be away from your child, especially in their formative years. People do it.
Yeah.
I mean, if they are still very career driven, and once again, this is going to, she mentioned it in her Twitter, you know, her Instagram post about, you know, her priority, you know, her priorities changing, and her priorities will continue to change. You know, she's up no more than, you know, 6 to 8, you know, as is typical, maybe, you know, 8 weeks along or however long along she is. She also did, I assume she was, you know, still working, taking bumps, you know, and having matches while she was, you know, pregnant when she didn't know it.
Right.
But I've assumed that, you know, that's already all been checked out and, you know,
yeah, fine. And that was most of that time period, I would think. And I mean, I guess I don't have the math in front of me, but I would think that most of that was coronavirus time, which she was already pretty limited with what she was doing.
Yeah, she did not wrestle a lot between February and March. I do not remember her wrestling a lot during that period. I mean, the most physically, the most physically demanding thing she did was the WrestleMania match with Shayna Baszler, which they would have filmed towards the latter part of March.
Oh, right.
So yeah, no, I'm another assumption that everything is fine.
I would think so too.
Yeah, but no, it is certainly a major loss for WWE, although there are ways they can spin this as well. I mean, they seem to not be as in control of the Bella Empire as they once were, so if they want to do reality television based on this or you know, do things where you film her, you can film her as she's preparing for motherhood, they could potentially do things of that nature. I would say that reality type television is going to be in vogue as we still are not in a position for, you know, major television production to return. So that might be a win in their favor.
Self-filming is certainly a very easy thing to do these days, even though we don't do it. But
right.
But yeah, I could see if her and Seth want to do things that way, it would not surprise me if that ends up happening. I mean, The Miz and Maryse have a show on USA. If it somehow got bumped to USA, I would not be completely shocked. Honestly.
No. Yeah, so they're just. That's just spitballing something.
Right.
But yeah, it will be interesting as things go on. As once again, we don't know where we will be, you know, coronavirus wise, over the next, you know, 6 months to a year. You know, there's things we don't know about how the virus will affects pregnant women. So will Seth have to, you know, give up his career? It looks like they're gonna go with, you know, Seth. Yeah, keeping on because, you know, I guess under the attitude that somebody needs to work in their household. But that will be interesting to see where things go there. As you said, but bringing this back around to your first point, it absolutely is a huge loss for WWE television, on par with Roman Reigns.
And I guess it is kind of interesting that it really finally puts someone that was not one of the four horsewomen into a very prominent role. And I don't think that it was really a whole lot of hyperbole, if any at all, when Becky said, "Asuka, you've been the best professional or the best women's professional wrestler for a while now." I think you can obviously even tell on WWE TV itself how much they're putting her on TV recently.
Oh yeah,
and what do you? I think your line is she's the greatest empty arena wrestler ever.
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah, she has just been amazing in the. She's amazing at all, you know, for her entire run. But you know, she has just been amazing. During this period, just a complete ball of energy. If everyone put the effort into their performance during these times, that Asuka is, this whole empty arena thing would be way more palatable in its entirety. You know, just constant movement, constant body language, her constant noise. Everything she does is just, it's like she's been wrestling in front of nobody for her entire career.
yeah, it is pretty wild. And it definitely all started when they let her show her personality and just let her rip in Japanese with her occasional English. And I mean, I guess that was kind of the other interesting thing about that segment. Like, there wasn't a better person to have Becky Lynch surrender the belt to than Asuka, just because they did just have the big feud recently. And Charlotte would be the only other person that would kind of fit that bill to me. Like, as much as they came up with Sasha and Bayley, like, Becky never really had much of a, you know, like, I don't remember too many feuds with either of those two, you know, Bayley or Sasha for Becky. Like, there was the one down in NXT, but on the main roster, which has, you know, been a while now, like, I can't really recall them having anything close to a long-term feud.
No, not long-term. I mean, they brought Sasha back to feud with Becky last year. They got two pay-per-views out of that. But oh. I get what you're saying. And once again, it's the right call as far as who to do it to. I mean, Asuka's absolutely earned it. She's been the light of this of this relatively dark period, and you know, said they've really developed a story with Becky and Asuka as we were heading into this year before everything all went to hell, and you know, it worked because Asuka has essentially without turning herself back babyface again, along with Kairi Sane. Anyway, from being so darn entertaining.
The only thing that she stopped doing is she stopped doing the green mist.
And she can still use that as a baby face too. They can come up with things for ways for her to do that. But I mean, it made the most sense for Asuka to do it if. You know, you wanted, obviously you wanted the emotional moment, and Asuka was the one who was going to give it to you, and Asuka certainly has, she at least has two heel opponents that she can work with, you know, in Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax on Raw. There's, you know, others, obviously. Now we're opening things back up again for, you know, Raw and SmackDown wrestlers to switch back and forth again, which under the circumstances is understandable. So you can so that could open up some more options. They, I mean, obviously last night, other than, you know, this in the women's division in WWE, other than Becky leaving and Asuka becoming champion, the story was Shayna Baszler, you know, after a rocky, probably a little bit of a rocky start, or yeah, I guess you could say start, absolutely, you know, becoming the evil heel of the women's division.
Yeah, they really helped her. Like, that was kind of the, I guess this past Raw to me was one of the more entertaining, or maybe the most entertaining Raw of the quarantine era. Is that, are we allowed to just name it already, the quarantine era?
I think we can. I think we can do that.
But I enjoyed the show, and that was definitely part of my enjoyment. Is like you said, like she'd kind of been. They showed her as a badass when she came in, but then she lost a couple of bit. You know, she lost to Becky at WrestleMania on kind of a weak roll up, and then when did she lose on a Raw?
No, she didn't lose on a Raw. I mean, she failed again at Money in the Bank.
Oh, yeah.
So you can count that. So
I felt like there was one other high-profile match that she kind of lost. You're just like, oh, man. Like, why did they just have her lose that?
Well, she came, well, it wasn't a loss because the match never started, but they did the triple threat with Nia versus Asuka versus Shayna, and that Nia got the best of.
Yeah, she kind of did, and maybe that's what I'm thinking of. She kind of kept on, well, her and Asuka kept on getting their asses kicked by Nia Jax.
Right.
But yeah, her character isn't what it needs to be. Is kind of where it was at, and. That was still killing me. Her putting the Kirifuda clutch on Rey during the Money in the Bank, that was one of the more amusing moments, but also kind of helped give her a little bit of credibility that seemed to carry over into last night.
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, it's Rey Mysterio, not Drew McIntyre, you know. Or Otis, or one of the larger men on the roster. So that was fun. It was a nice spot, and it showed how, you know, vicious and fearless she is. So that, again, that definitely carried into Raw with her, you know, essentially taking an anti-working mother stance, and thinking that women who you know, choose motherhood are weak because she is so focused on her career and just
yeah, and she doesn't have she doesn't have a parasite in her stomach.
So that was all good, and there's certain things that you can go with that. I mean, obviously it's. Obviously, Shayna versus Asuka is going to be a match down the line. Don't know if it's going to be a backlash or if they're going to wait later for that one. I probably would hold off on it because I think Asuka could be a long-term champion. So I don't really necessarily want to see her lose anytime soon. And Shayna's and Shayna's a character you really can't. Have her lose that, have her lose, and have her keep her credibility either.
Yeah, you kind of need a chicken shit heel to make an easy selection, and to be able to carry losses like that. And Shayna Baszler is not that. Like, when you're supposed to be the badass, and you know, and you lose all the time, it definitely takes the level of credibility of badass down quite a few notches.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I don't see her ever like, and it's not really a bad thing, but she definitely should be typecast for that kind of a role. So yeah, you got to kind of do a little protection on her.
Yeah, I'd like to see them try and at least get to SummerSlam without doing a Asuka, Major Asuka Shayna match, or at least the Major Asuka Shayna match without a clean finish. I guess you could do a non finish to get yourself to the bigger match with Shayna and Asuka, but I would not just job either of them first time out.
Yeah, it's well, yeah, because both of them really have the same gimmick in a lot of ways, or at least the same aura. You know, when you call yourself an empress, you kind of think of someone who's a bit of a badass. Because there is supposed to be some type of war involved in being an emperor or an empress. Yeah, so she can't take a whole lot of losses, either. Like, they kind of have that, yeah, that same feel. So, yeah, keep them apart, as long as you can. There's certainly, again, like, even the main roster has enough women. It's just that they don't use them as frequently as NXT does. And it hurts the depth of their division by not using them. And like you said, maybe we'll see a couple of ladies shuffle over to Raw to help, you know, help smooth things out with Becky being gone.
Right, yeah, we can absolutely see that, but you know, but certainly Asuka versus Shayna is a money match that in the division that you really should not squander in any way.
Yeah, agreed.
Especially since we don't know where we're gonna be, you know, down the road. I mean, WrestleMania is absolutely wide open. you know, and there's really no big matches you really think of for that one. So, yeah, you definitely got to be judicious in who you have Asuka roll over, but also who you ever have her lose to as well.
Agreed. Well, I guess if we stick with the ladies, we could talk about the return of the Iconics for a moment.
Yeah, we could talk about that.
I mean, again, like, they have enough women. I don't understand why they don't use them sometimes.
Yeah. These two have been on ice for seemingly the last 6 months.
Yeah.
And they just brought them back. Absolutely as they were with no change. So what the hell was the point of keeping... I guess if it was something personal, it's none of our business, but it just seems weird that they were just left off of everything for so long, and then they just came back like nothing happened. And, you know, with this, the exact same gimmick with nothing... with no retooling.
Yeah, that was the weirdest part, was the fact that there was no retooling. Like, yeah. it was the same bar, you know, or at least similar barbs that they were throwing previously. Yeah, it was kind of interesting. Like, I'm kind of surprised that they didn't at least tweak things.
Yeah, no. It's just like if they were not happy with the Iconics, then why would you bring them back without any kind of a gimmick change? You know, because they wrestled nowhere else. I mean, I Peyton Royce was basically becoming an Instagram model slash TikToker the last couple of months. Billy Kay, not as much on the socials, but still, occasional bikini picture that I'm definitely grateful for. But there's nothing that made me think that they've been training at the Performance Center because they didn't like their work. Or anything of the sort. It is a very strange story that you don't really see it very often, where people are just taken off TV for as long as they were, and then just brought back and just dropped back into things like nothing happened.
Yeah, it's it was a pretty weird situation, as you know. And I guess it would. The only way it gets weirder is if they end up beating Alexa and Nikki Cross. Then it would be really confounding why they're kept off of TV for so long.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that they're going to win the title match. But then, I mean, they're a team. One of the only, permanent women's teams left. Their second week back, they get a title shot, lose. Then what?
That's a good question.
So and the match has been advertised for Raw, so I don't know. There's like they got a finish in mind that's going to get them to the next pay-per-view. They're going to be back for a week and lose, and then as I said, then what's next for them?
I don't know. And that is always the problem with any of the WWE tag divisions, is that they're one team deep, basically, at any time. It's the champion and whoever the challenger is, and everyone else is off TV, and you wouldn't know about them. And yeah, even with the women being able to change brands, they still don't have enough women to get tag team competition together. It is kind of mind blowing with the size of their roster. There should not be a problem in doing this. But somehow there is.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, I guess that was interesting. But I think that about wraps it up for the ladies on Raw. I would have to say that the second biggest thing... what are your thoughts on Edge and Randy Orton continuing their feud?
Would not be my first choice for Edge's next opponent. Would not be my first choice for Edge's next or continuation of Edge's run here, but however long that's gonna last. But no, I mean, they both played it well. Orton was definitely very, very good on the mic last night, and in explaining his side and essentially doing his part to invalidate everything Edge has done since he came back, and saying that Edge is still untested and washed up essentially as a competitor. So now it was good. I mean, once again, it's something to do. They've obviously felt that they're low on star power right now. Obviously they've known about who knows when Roman Reigns is coming back, and they've obviously known for at least a few weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, about Becky Lynch. So I don't know if the original plan with Edge was for him to work a Backlash level show, but they need a spark right now. So they going went in this direction. I don't mind it. It's a little reverse logic with starting with the gimmick match and then going to the wrestling match. But Orton made it make sense enough.
And Edge being afraid almost of the match.
That part I wasn't as big a fan of. He could have been a little taken aback by it, but I feel like he still should have accepted last night instead of leaving it, as a cliffhanger.
And it was one of those things that I'm just like, I guess I was wondering why Edge had that much doubt. How many times was he champion? Like, I mean, I know that most of that, maybe you could have argued that he was, could you have argued that he was a chicken shit heel?
At various points, yes.
So, yeah, I mean, you could say that, but yeah, I think he had enough time as champion not that way that he shouldn't really have any doubts about his wrestling ability.
No, he really shouldn't. Then if he's got these kind of doubts, then why did he come back in the first place? I mean, he beat Orton in what's supposed to be the more physically demanding match, the match that was more dangerous. So, once again, he could have shown a little bit of concern and self doubt, but to leave it hanging like that, I didn't like that. And then there was, of course, Charlie Caruso having a gun to her head to deliver the line about it being one of the best, greatest wrestling matches of all time. that was just, because no one involved, especially Charlie, had any conviction to it at all. It's just like, it's not a big deal. It's not something to be hung up on and do 20 minutes on here or anywhere else, although I'm sure there are people who will go absolutely insane about it. But it's just a thing of, It's a lesson that should have been learned with Mr. Perfect and Shawn Michaels from SummerSlam 93. It's just, don't advertise a match as a classic before it happens.
Yeah. I mean, it drives me nuts when fans start chanting, "This is awesome," like 3 minutes into a match. Calling it one of the greatest matches ever, if it happens. Especially when it already did just happen. Like, even without the physically demanding part, like, they did have a match already. So, like, it's not something new. Edge's first match back was just a no DQ match. False count anywhere?
Last Man Standing. Almost got it.
I didn't rattle off enough gimmick matches to actually remember the right one. It's just a bad thing to have someone say. Like, that's one where I'm 100% just going, I feel bad for that person. Like, I don't have any problem with Charlie for saying that, because I know that those weren't her words.
No, of course they weren't. No, of course they weren't her words. But as I said, it puts a pressure on the match that's already, going to be rough. I mean, Edge is, of course, like 47 years old, and Randy's about 40, so it's like, and, we know what Randy Orton's style is.
Right.
Hopefully he will, because it's Edge and because of the big major spot it's in, hopefully he will he will rise to the occasion and do more than 5 minutes at a time of chin locks. But Edge in his first, you know, serious, well, you know, technical wrestling match in 9 years, and, you know, 2020 Randy Orton, I'm not exactly thinking it will be a classic, especially since their Last Man Standing match was an absolute bore fest. When I would have never predicted that. I mean, Edge is the guy I feel the worst for in this era, this quarantine era. He's the anti-Asuka. Just everything he's involved in, it just feels just completely deflated in this atmosphere, because it just should be such a just huge moment with him and the crowd. His match with Orton was definitely the match that most missed the crowd at WrestleMania. Everything Edge does just seemingly just misses that the crowd. And there is an element of with Edge of, I think, you know what, because there was a bidding war with AEW involved in Edge returning to the ring, and he negotiated, you know, one of the great deal. If you believe some of the number, the dollar figures that were that have been thrown around, he negotiated one of the great money deals of all time. And but for WWE's end, they're going to want to, even in the quarantine era, get their money's worth out of him. So he's working backlash.
Yeah, I guess I'm not terribly surprised by that. And it's still not exactly a demanding schedule.
No, I'm sure he'll, you know, after this, he might not wrestle again until SummerSlam or afterward, you know. WWE's going to have to keep making decisions on the fly as far as, you know, what they're going to do, keep going forward and with this, and hopefully, you know, audiences get used to this as the new reality, or if, you know, things can change in certain states, particularly Florida, where they can at least have a small audience in involved, you know, as the months go on. That will make things better, but yeah, once again, for it. I think I went way too sidebar there, but
no, it is kind of funny. Well, it related to Edge in that, so I mean, it makes sense, and it did kind of crack me up that the WWE, and I don't think Jeremy and I talked about this that much, but with the Bray Wyatt Braun Strowman match. They had the puppets out there, so they had people technically in the crowd. And it's just like, I keep on saying this, and it's just like, you can still have, there's enough room for a crowd there, just like, it's very similar to what AEW is doing. And you don't need that many people there. And Jeremy brought up a good idea, like, some of the people that are just training at the Performance Center that haven't even been on NXT TV, have them be the crowd. You know, no one's really going to notice them. And then when someone notices them, when they finally come up to NXT, I would think it would help. Because there's at least some type of memory recognition from seeing them is background characters cheering on wrestlers. So they could solve the problem, but they choose not to for whatever reason.
Right.
I'm trying to think of and we almost should have talked about this one when we were talking about Becky Lynch, but Seth Rollins being completely despondent makes sense for the character, but also really made for a lot of great memes over the evening. Yes. for jokes about child rearing.
Yeah, there's some funny memes out there, folks. If you know where to look for them, yes. Seth was they They could have used this as an opportunity to turn Seth back babyface, but they are still so light on the heel side that they got to bring over Baron Corbin for a night on Raw. So, Seth can stay heel. I mean, he's obviously coming off of a couple of major losses. So that's weighing on him. You know, his failure to win the WWE Championship at Money in the Bank, combined with the stress of fatherhood, and you know, once again, that doesn't really fit with what Seth is trying to do with his life, and as the Messiah of Monday Night Raw. So it made sense, you know, and putting him against Rey Mysterio is a good match for them. They haven't really had a lot of one-on-one matches between them in their history or all that much interaction. So yeah, it should be good. I mean, the attack on Mysterio was fairly brutal, and it looked good, and you know, the blood looked good. It, you know, I don't see where they where, you know, they inserted any kind of you know, I don't want to say fake blood or Ray would have, you know, cut himself. So I mean the magic behind how they pulled that off is a mystery to me.
Yeah.
The whole the referee immediately calling for the disqualification thing as soon as Seth, who was in the match, grabbed Mysterio, that was stupid.
Right.
But yeah, as a means to an end, it's not that big of a deal.
No. As long as we get the feud, I am for it. Like you said, they've had limited interactions, and it should be a fun matchup. Like, I'm glad that Rey can wrestle someone other than Andrade, Angel Garza, and Humberto Carrillo.
Yeah, no, that's very good. I'm glad to see Rey move on from that.
It would have been nice. I didn't say it back then, but it would have been nice to see Edge move on to someone else. But, you know, it is what it is. I guess, you know, Bobby Lashley was another one who got a nice, quick, decisive win. And I do think that is from Raw's, as you've already pointed out, lack of heels. And real lack of credible challengers for Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, no, they did their part to make Lashley a threat. Well, over the course of two nights, because he wasted R-Truth pretty quickly on Backlash, and he's been getting pretty much squash wins for
a few weeks now.
Yeah, I mean, he lost, I believe, to Aleister Black at WrestleMania, but from there, he hasn't lost anything and has been pretty dominant. They did the deal with MVP in the backstage area. They still need to figure out exactly what they're doing with MVP here, and he needs to drop those Australian white dudes quickly. There's nothing there. There's no chemistry with them. Those guys have no business on Monday Night Raw at this stage in their development. And I know at least one of them, Thorne, has been, you know, in NXT for like 5 years, but there's just nothing there, charisma-wise. There's nothing about them that stands out. So,
No, it's almost... It feels as odd as when Paige picked up the Kabuki Warriors. You're like, I'm okay with MVP, you know. I was okay with Paige being, some type of manager given her situation. And I'm good with MVP being a manager, given that he's of the older age, too. But why not pair them with someone that kind of suits them more? You know, like, it's like they can either... The WWE only goes super stereotype, or they just go completely bonkers like this for reasons unknown. He's serving MVP is serving too many roles. Like, it's kind of weird how much they've interjected him into Raw storylines just in general since his return. Like, it seemed like it was going to be a one-off thing, and now, like you said, like, he has Brandon Vink and Shane Thorne. He's stirring the pot with a couple other superstars. Because was he... Oh, well, they had the R-Truth Bobby Lashley moment at the Money in the Bank. And he's kind of continued to be a little bit of a dick, too, like, in his interactions. Like, MVP is really all over the map, and it's... It's really hard to get a beat on what they want his character to be.
Yeah, it is. It's been a weird return for him. One week he's wrestling. Next week he's hosting a talk show. Next week he's managing a rookie tag team that he doesn't really fit with. He would definitely fit with Lashley. And not just because of the color of their skin, but they've known each other a long time. They're very likely friends in real life.
And they did do a good job even establishing that they were both in the same spot back, like when they were in the WWE previously. Like,
yeah,
they gave
good.
Them a real human connection moment that. It would have made way more sense to have those two together just from the way they're bonding just in that segment without, factoring in the other stuff.
Yeah. So I could definitely, enjoy more interaction with them and MVP becoming Lashley's permanent manager and just ending this whole Lana thing. I had to make the point on Twitter about, after the Lana MVP interaction, before WWE, Lana was actually a professional actress and dancer. Two things that I do not understand how anyone could ever think that she's good at, from what I've seen.
It was
very bad.
Yeah, her acting is horrific.
It was so much better when she was doing the accent. It's like...
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, she dropped the accent, and then somehow it got worse.
Somehow her being herself is worse. I don't know. Honestly, the Lashley-Lana thing really, other than a few laughs, it really hasn't worked. So I could enjoy ending it and putting MVP with Lashley permanently. Or for as permanent as any kind of manager-wrestler relationship is in today's WWE until Vince McMahon gets bored with it. other than Lesnar and Heyman, of course.
Which
Lesnar will not allow. Yeah, they've teased Lesnar-Heyman breakups more than once, and it was put a stop to quickly.
Yeah, I don't see that one happening. Happening too soon. Oh dear Lord. Do we want to talk about the basketball segment at all?
I mean, it was cute. It was kind of funny. I mean, the Viking Raiders. Convincing the Street Profits that they didn't even know what basketball was, and then in the second game, just lighting them up. It was kind of funny. It was inoffensive.
It was not the worst thing, but it really didn't do a whole lot. I guess since there isn't much else to talk about on Raw. Unless you feel like there is?
Raw? I don't know. There's nothing else on Raw to talk about.
We thought that we were going to need to fill more time talking about the Last Ride. Part One. It aired directly after Money in the Bank. Did you just keep on watching there?
No, I did not. It had been dropped on demand early in the afternoon, so I watched it then.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I waited until the evening. It was pretty interesting, and I think you can obviously tell, like, if you're doing a film crew for the first time in your career, and you put your gloves and you put your whole gimmick in the ring, it's going to be kind of fascinating to see the next part, to see where this goes.
Yeah, it definitely, it's interesting that they did it this way. The way it sounds like it was only meant to be a thing that they did, you know, heading into WrestleMania in Orlando against Roman Reigns, which was at the time believed it was going to be Undertaker's last match, which it did not. We obviously all know it ended up not being. So, you know, and they've got a four more episodes to keep to tell the story through, from the aftermath of that through, basically through the Boneyard match at this year's WrestleMania. So that is very interesting. It's, you know, there's certainly things there's parts of it that make me uncomfortable. I mean, I've been very uncomfortable with Undertaker, you know, shedding the gimmick and being real in real life settings, for a while now. My comment is always, nobody ever needed to know what the Undertaker's politics are, and he literally wears it on his shirt and on his hat throughout the documentary, which makes certain people uncomfortable, and I completely understand their discomfort with it. it is still interesting, and it's interesting to contrast with this series with The Undertaker with what's going on in today's WWE. You've got talent essentially making the decision, like Becky Lynch, Roman Reigns, also we haven't even talked about it, but apparently Sami Zayn, the current reigning Intercontinental Champion, refusing to work anymore during the quarantine era, possibly needing to have the Intercontinental title vacated, a decision made on that and announced this week on SmackDown. That rumor is out there. We've got young wrestlers essentially deciding that there's more important things in life than professional wrestling, and in some cases, you know, planning their exit strategies as far as what they're going to do with the next phase of their life, because they don't want to be that guy, still hanging on in his mid-50s.
Yeah, and I don't blame them at all. It's the one line that keeps on getting repeated, and it's Michelle McCool who keeps on going, "Oh, people have no idea how much pain he's in." And I'm like, woman, all you need to do is watch him walk, and you have some idea of how much pain he's in.
Yeah, I don't understand why. I understand the feeling that match with Roman Reigns is not how he wanted to go out, but there was nothing that he could be proud to go out on for the next 3 years until they did the Boneyard match, which was completely, forced by the circumstances of the quarantine era. I still don't know what an Undertaker AJ Styles match, a regular Undertaker versus AJ Styles match, would have looked like. In so many ways, this WrestleMania actually worked out for this WrestleMania to be done the way it did. with the card that they had. Scheduled.
Well, and I guess
that matched the most of all.
Yeah, that's kind of the other part. Is that I'm just kind of interested to figure out, like, it seemed like he was ready to retire after that the Roman Reigns WrestleMania. What ends up bringing him back? Like, is it just the Saudi money?
Well, first he did the WrestleMania match with Cena, where they did the build up where it wasn't even sure that he was going to show up. And then they had a really clunky under 5 minute match. Then Undertaker did the Saudi deal with an Australia deal, and they brought Shawn Michaels back for it, which had a really bad tag match that Shawn has seemingly just tried to block out of his mind and pretend it never happened.
Yes.
And that's pretty much the story of Undertaker trying to return and trying to keep. I think last summer they brought him back for a tag match with Roman Reigns against Drew McIntyre and Shane McMahon. Believe, you know, Undertaker did fine in that match. It was a tag match. They made it work, but it was also an opening match on an Extreme Rules, so it's just like, I mean, once again, things actually really worked out for Undertaker to be able to have the Boneyard match with AJ Styles, if that's how he chooses to go out, which that is how he should choose to go out at this point.
Well, yeah, I think we've already discussed in our post-WrestleMania, the Undertaker's had two perfect outs, and he didn't take the first one. And
I mean, it's because, you know, he felt that he wasn't up to par in the match with Roman Reigns, which it didn't matter because it was all about, you know, the finish and Undertaker saying his goodbye and the ceremony of him putting in everything in all his gear in the middle of the ring and doing the pose, the kneel and the reach the heavens pose. It was so perfect. It didn't matter what the match was. Now you can't put that genie back in the bottle. You can't do that again. So he kept going and going and going, and it definitely got sad after that.
Yeah, if it was not sad prior to that.
Yeah,
because, like,
there were some rough matches prior to that, yes.
Yeah, there were some rough matches prior to that, and, you know, the Brock Lesnar streak breaking one, you're like, at first I'm like, oh, that was a terrible match. I remember thinking, but then getting the details of why it was a terrible match, you're like, you kind of let that one slide a little bit, or at least I do. But pretty much every match after that was kind of bad. And I guess that's the other funny thing about that Roman Reigns match is I thought it was a fairly good match.
Yeah, I did not see it as that. But there were moments, but you could there were moments where Undertaker wasn't at his best, certainly. But you could have excused it by how exhausted he was. By he was the old gunslinger who finally met his match and was at his last fight.
I guess it did crack me up that he was really hung up on that, because it does look like Roman Reigns was supposed to give him a tombstone pile driver at some point.
Yeah,
there and that because that was
I vaguely remember that we made that point then that shouldn't even try that. I believe we did that on our post-WrestleMania show then.
Yeah, it is quite possible. Go back and listen to the archives, people. But that was the only... And I guess that's the funny thing, is that was the only part of the match that didn't go as planned. Like, everything else seemed to run smoothly after that. And before that, honestly, like, one botch does not mar a match. I mean, because if you really want to argue about it, because was something went wrong that first Taker-Shawn Michaels match, if I'm not mistaken. But because the rest of the match was so good, like, no one remembers that there was a little botch in there.
No. In many ways, it kind of added to the match too, because it was the botch dive where they had one of the undercard wrestlers dressed as a cameraman, and he was supposed to take the suicide dive, and he was too far away, so Undertaker pretty much splatted on the floor. In many ways, it added to the match, actually.
Yeah.
But whatever. But it's, as I said, Undertaker really needs to let this image, whatever he has in his head of the perfect farewell, go, and just live the rest of his life. And, you know, and no, he does not need. And once again, he does not need to let the world know what he thinks about anything. Just go off. Just go off into the sunset. You have earned it. Don't make people hate you.
Yeah.
In the latter years of your life.
Yeah, that is. That it is kind of funny that the opening up has led to something of a tarnishing of his image. But just honestly, by the sheer. I guess that is a point, too, that they make. The fact that he was available for that much time for the WWE, like, even if the last, decade has been pretty part-time, you know, I would say probably 10 years ago he was doing more, obviously more regular appearances than now, but it was still pretty limited even at that point. And I'm trying to remember what my point of bringing that up was. Like, oh, he's kind of been working a half schedule for a long time. Just get out, man. Like, his perfect image, like, I don't know what it is. And I, honest to God, hope that the AJ Styles match is the last one, because it was an extremely memorable match. And we even talked about it at the time. Like, it hid his flaws.
Yeah.
And you're not going to have another in-ring match that's going to be able to, even as good as AJ Styles is, A, he's slowing down himself because he's getting older. But B, like, you just can't make up for that at some point.
No. You certainly can't. It was the right way to go out. With the WWE continuing to try and to top themselves with cinematic style matches, I don't think they really have. Because I think the Boneyard match was better than the Firefly Funhouse match, which was better than the Climb the Corporate Ladder Money in the Bank match, which, not that I didn't not enjoy, you know, the Money in the Bank, but there's only so much you can do with the concept of you know, doing these cinematic matches, essentially, you know, filming, doing short film, turning matches into short films. There's certainly more that they can go with it, but you also can't go too far with it. You can't do it too often. A lot of people have already seen the stuff that, you know, TNA has tried to do, that Matt Hardy has tried, that Matt Hardy has done, both in various promotions. Impact has tried to continue on that style of filmmaking as well. There's only so much you can do. And does Undertaker, after he did the one that was received so well, does he want to be the guy who has to keep going on in matches where there's a director who will yell cut when something doesn't go right? Or when he needs to take a break.
I guess he could do that. Like, if that's the route that they go. But again, like, whew, man, to have another one that's as fun as the Boneyard match is going to be tough.
You can only do something for the first time one time.
Sure, sometimes, occasionally, the sequel is better than the original, but 9 times out of 10, the original is better than the rest of the series.
Right.
It was pretty fascinating. I'm glad that he didn't actually talk politics.
Right.
that would have been a little bit more rough than just having to see it represented. I don't know how well I'll stay on top of the series moving forward, But it did catch my attention. Like, I guess I haven't really watched too many of these documentaries that the WWE has done.
Yeah, no,
And I
they're
feel
very
like
good
they've
for
done a
you at a good
number.
time. Yeah, but I think this one, because it was the first one, it's very well received. And it's definitely something that it's WWE's version, as they were trying to very much coin. It's WWE's version of The Last Dance on ESPN with Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. So it's definitely something worth covering, and I also think it was worth it because of the contrast with what we're seeing now with, as I said, with today's wrestlers seemingly, just not wanting to end up like The Undertaker, which is kind of sad.
Well, on that note, I'm not sad that I bought Hoofhearted Brewing's All Together, which is a collaboration beer to support hospitality professionals. It is an IPA that is 6.5% alcohol. All of the proceeds went to their employees who are currently not employed or underemployed. So that I thought that that was a good route to go. The beer is fairly tasty. I drank it in my El Segundo Broken Skull IPA glass to keep with the wrestling theme. And yeah, I will look forward to drinking three more of these come the future. So that is the Belt Time beer of this show. Hoofhearted is I don't know if they're I don't think they're distributing widely. So that one is just the local beer. But I know that some of the other breweries in town are starting to distribute all over the state of Ohio, so more people might get to taste them. Come the future points. Yeah, and that's it. At DeFrango11, at Stunt Cali, the brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever you happen to pick up this podcast, because I think we've worked out most of the kinks that were in the system. So have a good night.
Later.